Good evening. You're listening to special election coverage on KRBD Ketchikan. My name's Layla Carey, and for the next hour, we'll be talking with candidates for Ketchikan City Council. With me in the studio are incumbents Dick Koos, Mark Flora, and Dave Kiefer. This is a call-in show. If you have questions for the candidates, please call 225-9655. But first, we'll start off with some introductory remarks from each of the candidates. Tell us about yourself and why you're running to retain your council seat. And this time, we will start with Mark Flora.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I've been in Ketchikan for 33 years. I'm married with two adult children. I was appointed to the city council last October. And the reason that I decided to run this time around is I didn't think that 11 months was an ample opportunity to see if I could have some sort of positive impact and outcome on some of the issues facing the city. Also, the easiest thing to do is to sit at home and complain and criticize. So I thought that a little bit of public service couldn't hurt.
Thank you very much. And Dave Kiefer.
I've been on city council for the past 3 years. Prior to that, I served for 6 years as the borough mayor, and prior to that, 5 years in the borough assembly. We've got some very major issues coming up, having to do with the ports, having to do with the water system. And as Mr. Flora pointed out, the easiest thing in the world is to sort of throw your hands up and say, let someone else solve it. I feel it's important. I've lived here my whole life. I've been actually, for those of you listening to KRBD, I've been a volunteer for 40 years. So
that was 40.
Actually, 4-2. But who's counting? Ketchikan's been very good to me, and it's really important. It's always been important for me to be giving back as much as possible.
Thank you. And Dick Koos.
Yeah, Dick Koos. I've been in Ketchikan, well, southeast for 37 years. 7 years of that was in Juneau, but I've got a wife, grandkids, and great-granddaughters in town. So when I came up here in, I think, 1980 it was, why I figured I'll be back south, you know, give it a little bit of time. And now if you go back south, you don't want to live down there. You want to live in Ketchikan. So that's why I'm here and probably why I'm trying to, after working for the government for 35 years, I can give back now. And I've got a lot of experience that side, and also having been on the borough assembly for two terms and city council, this may be the fourth, I don't know, I just lost count, but there's a lot of things going on. I think I can help with these gentlemen here and the other people on the council to make it right. And the like Dave said, the port down there is going to be a big issue for us, big money in the next couple of years. It's got to keep the economy going, and infrastructure is another one, and then just keeping city finances under control. They'll get out of hand if we don't watch.
Okay, thank you very much. And again, this is a call-in show, and 1 hour goes very quickly, so if you do have any questions for the candidates, call 225-9655 so we can get you in there. And you all are running without challengers. Why do you think there was so little interest in the city race? And this time we'll start with Dick Koos.
That's a very good question. I figured we would have it, have the competitors, but from what people have said, you must be doing a good job, so take it as that. I'll take it as that.
All right. And Mark Flora.
I have no idea. I look at the fact that there are a lot more people running for school board and borough assembly. So the easiest thing to tell ourselves is, we're doing such an awesome job that why would anybody want to change? But I honestly don't know why there was no opposition.
And Dave Kiefer?
It's an interesting situation. This is the first time in 20-odd years or so of running that I'm actually have no opposition, which is kind of odd. And it's also interesting, too, because, you know, when Mr. Flora was appointed, we had quite a few people who expressed interest as well. And that seems to happen. When there's an appointment in midstream, you get 8 or 10 or sometimes 15 folks who show up and go, we're interested. And you say, great, run in October, and they almost never do. And it's really kind of sad, because I think we could always benefit from having opportunities and choices and having people, you know, different people run, because at the very least, it requires us the incumbents to justify our time and say what we're going to do better next time.
Based on some of the comments on our Facebook posts about city issues, there's plenty of complaints out there, but no actual opposition. And if anybody out there listening has a thought on why there were no challengers, go ahead and give a call at 225-9655. And there is a ballot issue for city voters this year, and that's the Uber ban, which actually would ban all Uber-style transportation network companies from operating within city limits. That would include Lyft. I don't know if there are any other companies like that. Do you support that ballot question? And this time we'll start with Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you support the question? I'm not clear. Do we support it being on the ballot, or do we support the?
Do you support the Uber ban?
Okay, it is not an easy situation because on one hand I certainly believe in competition, and I believe it can. It usually helps. What I'm worried about in this case is the lack of transparency with groups like Uber and Lyft, and that's intentional because they had the state write the laws so that they wouldn't be open with the local communities they're in. Cab companies pretty much have to follow the regulations that we set. Uber and Lyft and other groups like that do not. And so therefore we have no local control over those groups. And that's a problem, particularly when it comes to making sure that we are receiving the tax revenue that we're supposed to receive from those groups. And for every person out there who said, well, I'm going to get my business license and I'm going to pay my taxes, I remember when this first started, there were three or four people who had signed up, and none of them had gotten their licenses, and none of them were doing anything at that point. Now, I believe that really good, conscientious Uber drivers will do the right thing. But the point is, as a community, we won't know if they don't, unless we want to run around trying to enforce it and having the police try to pull over everyone who picks up a tourist and find out, have you paid your taxes or not, which we don't want to do that either. So it's a tough one. Personally, I guess because of the fact that I feel we don't have any sort of local control, I will probably vote no. I'm sorry, I'll vote yes for the ban, but I also suspect it will pass widely. I'm sorry, the ban will fail widely. I'm sorry. I hate when you're voting yes. It's confusing.
When you're voting yes against something?
Well yeah, exactly. Yes is really a no vote, which is I understand the reason that we always do that, but it always drives me crazy because you're voting yes to say no. We're voting no to say yes.
All right. And Dick Coos. Did you follow all that?
Almost. But anyway, what Dave said is true. I think the biggest issue with me was the state forced something on us and took our control away from it. And then we had a number of people come in and say they would prefer we did ban it. So to me, the ultimate way to deal with it was and the law allowed us to do it, was to let the people vote. And I was 6-1, a half dozen the other. Me, it doesn't make me any difference. So I'm going to let the people vote.
How are you going to vote on it?
That's a good question. Probably I'll vote no simply because we don't know whether we're going to have any control over it. I will vote yes.
Okay.
To ban,
I was
do the ban.
Say. You mean you'll vote yes?
I will vote yes to ban it simply because the state has taken away the local control.
Okay. Thank you. And Mark Flora.
When this issue comes to the council, because of some family relations, I've been asked to abstain on votes and will continue to do so. So I hope I'm not stepping out of line here, but I'll tell you what I think. Like Dave, I'm a big believer in free enterprise, and the less government intrusion, the better. But in this case, I don't believe that the playing field is level. The taxi cabs are clearly marked. They operate under a certificate of public convenience and necessity, which means they have an obligation to answer their phone 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Folks that are going to drive for Uber and Lyft can log on and off the network whenever they choose, which means if you need a ride at 2 in the morning on February 12th, chances are it's going to be hard to obtain an Uber or Lyft ride anyway. I also, after 2 days of phone calls and emails trying to talk to a live person, I was never able to connect with another human being, so I went online and found the best vehicle inspection that I could for Uber and put it side by side with the city inspection that the taxi cabs have to operate under, and there's simply no comparison. So I have nothing against Uber or Lyft in theory, but I don't think the playing field is level. And when it comes to tax revenue, we've got no way of knowing effectively who's going to be driving and who's going to be reporting. So this is an opportunity for some tax revenue to not occur. And I would, based on that, I would probably vote to not allow those companies to operate in the community.
Okay, so you're basically planning to vote yes to ban.
Yes to be against it.
Okay, got it. And again, this is a call-in show. If you have questions for our city council candidates, call now, 225-9655. And the cruise industry, which is wrapping up for the year, is clearly a huge part of our local economy. But the question has come up, are we at capacity? Do we really need to expand the port in order to handle larger ships? And this time we'll start with Mark Flora.
Yes. To accommodate the new classes of ships, the quantum class, the ships that are going to be upwards of 1,150 feet, and to have timely loading and unloading of the passengers, we do need to expand the port. But you ask a really pertinent question. Are we near capacity? We're at 1 million people this year, and in the next 10 years, they're talking about maybe upwards of 1.4 million visitors a year coming to Ketchikan. The cruise industry is obviously a huge economic driver of what goes on in our town, but I think we're very near capacity, and I think we have to be very careful with how these expansions occur. We're going to have people, I think particularly at berths 1 and 4, we're going to have other local businesses and harbor users that are going to have some rightful anxiety over making those berths longer. Access to Thomas Basin could be impeded. We have air taxi operators who have already told us that if berth 4 gets expanded, they may not be able to ramp their planes at the end of the day. So while we want to accommodate and grow the tourist industry, we don't want to punish other local businesses and the residents that live here.
Thank you. And Dave Kiefer.
It's hard to actually add much to what Mark just said, because it's absolutely correct. We can't not – people say, why don't you say enough is enough. We're done. We've spent hundreds of millions of dollars in the last, you know, couple of decades expanding the port. We're good. That's not the way it works. We have to be careful whatever we do, that, as Mark said, we do not, you know, further impede other businesses in Ketchikan. And also just turn the downtown Ketchikan into a giant people parking lot. You've got a million people standing around pointing at each other because there's nowhere to go and nothing to do. And we have that physical limitation as well. That said, we just can't throw up our arms and say, we're good, we're done. Bring a million, but don't bring any more. Because with them changing ships, there is a real likelihood they can and will go elsewhere. And it's not like we can say, hold it at a million, then all of a sudden they hold it at 800,000, then they hold it at 700,000, they hold it at 600,000, and pretty much we turn into Prince Rupert. And that's not where we want to be. So it is a very challenging situation. We need to look at the uplands. We need to look at virtually everything else we can think of before we just automatically say, yeah, we're going to extend berth 1, we're going to extend berth 4, we're just going to, you know, go whole hog, we're going to have ships parked between, you know, downtown and Safeway. You know, that's not going to work either.
Thank you. And Dick Coos.
The answer is like the two gentlemen said, yes, we need to expand. And I'll put another comment in. Yes, on certain days we are probably at capacity. And when we throw one of these bigger ships on any one of those days, like a Monday or a Thursday, it's really going to get crunch time. And so I think that we got to be smart about how we do it, and also smart about how we let our consultants lay things out for us in order to accommodate those folks. But my understanding is at least one of the cruise lines is talking about a bigger ship on a Wednesday, which we don't have many people for. And that's what we've got to do, is to, we got to expand probably two ports to accommodate the bigger ships. Two is going to have some work on it to fit in the middle, but it's still got to be, a big ship. Three is probably going to be a medium-sized ship, which we're going to get next year with the Bliss. They say 4,800 people. And that's going to be a 30% increase on a ship for that one dock, which is, it's got limited parking space to get tour buses on and off. So we've got some challenges, but we can't bury our heads in the ground and not do nothing, or we'll lose them because they won't come, because the bigger ships are all only going to be the only thing there. We do have to take into consideration, like Mark and Dave both said, the businesses on either end, because it's going to be one, it's going to be four, and they need to be, it needs to be a public process, and we need to go through it and work it, see how best we can work it out. But I do have a real feeling, and I've said it for years, that on a daily basis there's a capacity. And when we hit, we're hitting 13,000 people right now, and when we hit 16, I'm saying we're crunched. And so that means ships have got to come in on different days if we can get the cruise lines to work it out. Big deal.
Yeah.
Big deal.
And switching topics a little bit, expanded water metering appears to be moving forward, at least on an exploratory level. And is that something that's in our future on a wider basis? And this time we'll start with Dick Coos.
Yeah, I think on the commercial basis, we've told staff to come back with a plan. And because right now, water's just free-flowing. And people are not really paying for what they're using. It's just used, and try to make it equitable, because right now the residential people are probably paying the most on a per 1,000 gallons. And if we start to get everybody on a metered rate, there's going to be some balancing out between what they're paying now. Some may go up, some may go down. And we'll start with the commercial folks. I've had a number of residential people say, I want to be on a meter. The big crunch on a meter for the residential is the cost of that meter installation, which is, well, they're saying it's $2 million for just 400 commercial customers. So what's it going to be for, say, 4,000 residential customers? Some of us will volunteer to put a meter in if they'll just give us a residential metered rate, because I know how much water I use. I was metered before down south and in Juneau. And I'm, as far as I'm concerned, I'm paying twice too much for water. So we'll see where that goes. But the first step is commercial folks, and we need to make it.
Okay. And Mark Flora?
Our water and wastewater utilities do not sustain themselves presently. Water does need to be paid for on a usage basis. And while I know that is not an appetizing prospect for folks who may soon be metered on the commercial side and may find that their rates go up, there simply isn't a rational alternative to placing an excessive amount of the burden on the residential users while the commercial accounts, I don't say get a pass, but they get a little bit of a break. It's a commodity, and if you went into their businesses and purchased 10 of something or 10 units of whatever, you would be expected to pay for the 10 units of whatever product or service that they're providing. So the inverse has to also be applicable. On the residential side, it simply isn't viable cost-wise, and that question also dovetails a little bit into other priorities when it comes to the residential side. Before we meter the residents, we probably need to do a better job of cleaning up the water that actually goes to their homes.
And Dave Kiefer.
Good point. On one hand, it still seems bizarre to me that we pay for water in a place where there is so much water. Though it also fascinates me that people out the road actually have to get water brought to their tanks every so often when we have 2 weeks of dryness. Traditionally, water costs have been subsidized by other parts of the utility that have made plenty of money. We are not at that stage anymore. Water has to pay for itself. Therefore, we have to raise rates. We've gone through a fairly painful process recently of raising rates on the fish processors. And that was not, particularly someone like me who grew up in that industry, that's almost painful to vote for those type of increases. As a business owner, I suspect that we will probably, right now we are paying for the size of the hose that comes into our store. We use almost no water. I suspect that it will actually benefit us. It will probably benefit a lot of businesses that way. I think the reality is we have to know what people actually use. And we have to figure out a way to charge them for that actual usage. And I understand structurally it's going to be a challenge here getting all the meters in and everything else. But this isn't anything that virtually every other community in the world does, that hasn't done before. We're kind of like the last one saying, we're still in the wild west of water. And I think we probably at this point, in order to make sure that we're not losing money on our water system and make sure that we have the money to fix the pipes and to fix everything. And as we're looking ahead to potential filtration, these are not cheap things. So, yeah, I think meters are the way to go.
And Dick, who's had another thought?
Just a piece of information for people that might not understand how complicated the commercial water rates are set. For a hotel, we count the number of toilets, the number of sinks, the number of showers. It's all counting stuff that may use water. And so it gets real complicated on how to deal with it. And a meter is very simple. And like Dave said, some will go up, some will go down, but it's going to simplify and make the rates more equitable.
Okay. And Dave brought up another utility that used to make quite a bit of money and doesn't quite so much anymore, and that's KPU Telecommunications, I'm assuming is what you're referring to. Mm-hmm. And the city a few years ago, and to a certain degree, is still attempting to sell. I see an executive session every now and then for an update on selling KPU Telecommunications. Is that something that you support, and is that something that the city is indeed still moving forward with and hoping to accomplish? And this time we'll start with Dave Kiefer.
Well, one of the challenges to that is when the city first started talking about this 20 years ago, Dick, probably.
Yeah. We voted.
Telecom was worth a heck of a lot more than it apparently is worth today. There's a lot of infrastructure needs. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of, there are less federal subsidies in certain ways. I mean, at one point, it was one thing to say, yeah, let's sell telecom. We're going to get $25 million. And more recently, it's been, let's sell telecom and we'll get $1 million or $2 million. And suddenly at that point, you have to say, well, is it worth it selling it off and then losing local control over it? Because the one thing that's always bothered me is the state of Alaska has a utilities rate commission up north that, as far as I can tell, has never seen a rate increase it hasn't liked. And anytime an outside company comes and says, we need a 30% rate increase, it usually bends over and goes, yeah, great, wonderful. And who gets messed up? The local residents. And now we're kind of at the stage where we probably wouldn't make enough money off a sale of KPU Telecom to, give up that control. That said, though, the other side of that, real quickly, is that we're also looking at having to make technology increases and pay for more stuff, and it gets more complicated. I mean, right now, everyone agrees we haven't got enough bandwidth in Ketchikan. Too many people downloading Netflix, and, my computer is slow. So at a certain point, maybe we can't afford anymore to keep, throwing money at it because it's not making the money it used to make.
And Dick Coos?
Yeah, I believe that probably that sale is still on the table somewhere, but nobody's come forward to deal with it. And if they do come forward, then I think we've got to have a good business plan, that says, okay, we're going to have to invest this many million dollars to keep it running, and this is what we may get from it, and see what is the most logical thing that we should do that benefits the citizens. And I don't know what that answer is till we see an offer and see what somebody estimates that technology that changes every 2 years. They want $1 million every year to change technology on this place, which gets scary because it's gone. It's bad in a year.
Yep, that's how technology works these days. And Mark Flora.
It's not a simple issue. We have a utility that's been for sale for well over a decade that's had, relatively new to the council, so I'm kind of looking to these other guys for advice, but next to nothing as far as real interest. As the sale price or the value has declined, whose infrastructure needs are going up. So that's a real challenge, but you can't ignore it. So it doesn't look like we're going to be selling it tomorrow just based on market interest. So how do we fund the technological improvements that it needs? Because if we don't sell it, we have to be able to provide the service that the customers want. And if we do sell it, we want a product that's current and top flight that has as much market value as possible. I would say, just from the little bit of exposure I've had on this issue, I would say that in the near term, that baby's ours, and we probably need to look at ways to see how we keep up with the technology going forward so that we're providing a good, current, up-to-speed product.
Thank you. And we do have a caller on the line with a question. Calvin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead with your question, Calvin.
Yeah, going back to the bigger docks and the cruise ships, the larger cruise ship, does anybody ask any questions about the infrastructure in Ketchikan? My understanding is they're having a heck of a time keeping police officers and, EMTs. Has anybody said anything about that, that they added need for that when there's more people in town?
Okay, we haven't addressed that yet, but we'll go ahead and do that now. And this time we'll start with Mark Flora.
I'm not aware of any conversations or information that's come to the council that has addressed that. That's a great question. I don't know if public safety folks are going to be available in abundance to handle the larger cruise ship, capacity that we're going to see. So I'm sorry, but I don't have an answer on that one.
And Dave Kiefer.
I think in general, this is something we have looked at off and on over the past, decade. We certainly have, as a community, started to tap into the head tax dollars we get from the cruise lines in order to provide more emergency services. Because you actually have to have folks stationed downtown during the day, because there are a surprising number of runs that we make getting injured people or people who are not well get off the ships and have to go use our emergency room. We're looking now through the Upland stuff at how can we better deploy our crossing guards, because frankly, by the time you get 16,000 people in town, we all become crossing guards, and that's kind of a challenge. But it's a real good question, and I think we haven't truly up to this point, I think, wrestled with the idea of just what are the effects on those sort of services. And we talk about the fact that if we have a million cruise passengers several thousand cruise passengers in town on any given day, they're going to overload our technology. We've talked about how to get them back and forth across the streets. We've talked about how to get them other places. But the whole idea of, what is the change in our infrastructure if we go from, as Dick said, 13,000 to 16,000? Doesn't sound like a big change, but I suspect it means a whole lot more of those infrastructure needs.
And Dick Coos.
Without trying to repeat it, basically the staff has not brought back or brought that issue up, so I'm glad this gentleman brought it up, and it's something that we will take a look at. I mean, simple answer, it needs to be looked at to see whether the staffing will take care of it or not.
Okay. Calvin, did that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for your question. And switching gears slightly to the city budget, always a fascinating topic. What measures would you support to keep the city budget balanced? It's a big part of the city council's job. And this time we will start with Dick Coos.
Every year, we spend almost 2 months looking at the city budget and going through page by page and kind of grilling the staff on, do you really need this, do you really need that, and seeing if what's been spent has really been spent the right way. So I think it's a time-consuming, tedious thing that we just need to go through. And I know I've been through enough of these budgets that I know where, I'll say carefully, where things may be hidden. So we start looking at those places and trying to find out why they're really there and tweak them around a little bit. But I think the one thing about the city budget that would be helpful to me is that people, when it gets out, look at it online, and if you've got some comments about the city budget, let us know, because we miss things. I mean, that's about 3 inches thick, if you want to put it that way. If it's on the computer, it's only as thick as the computer, but it's still a lot of pages to go through. Yeah. So help us out if you're willing and got the time to look at that budget online. But it is a challenge, and we need to stay on top of it.
Thank you. And Mark Flora.
Dick made a great comment. This money belongs to the residents. We're tasked with a fiduciary responsibility to spend it as wisely as possible, but it's the money belongs to the residents. How do we balance the budget? We have ever-increasing infrastructure needs, sales tax revenue that's flat or slightly smaller. It is going to be a challenge going forward, so I think we need to look for efficiencies wherever we can. A while back down here at Maine, City Public Works took on a road project. They did it in-house. People that are already employed by the city took on that project and handled it. So when there are occasions when these types of maintenance or capital projects can be done in-house with people that are already working for the city, we need to look at that as one potential source of savings. We need rates, we just discussed this, that are equitable and that charge a fair price based on usage of whatever commodity it is that the city's providing, so that everybody's paying their fair share and nobody's being penalized and nobody's being subsidized. We need to look at how we award contracts and change orders and contingencies and really knuckle down on those things and try to get the best bargain, the most equitable deal we can when we negotiate a contract with an outside vendor for whatever product or service they're going to provide. And then when something goes awry, we should step up and ask them to be accountable and to take care of issues if they arise that are within the scope of that contract. Those are reasonable things that if you go to a private sector provider of goods and services, that's exactly what you expect. We as the city should expect no less from the people that we contract with.
Thank you. And Dave Kiefer.
Yeah, I agree with both what Dick and Mark just said. I think another thing to keep in mind, too, is that are the residents who, it's right, it is their money, are they getting, for the most part, what they feel like they're paid for? And I think in general, I will say this about city government over recent years, there have been few of those little outbreaks that happen when people feel like they're not being treated well by the government. And there have been certainly a lot fewer on the city side than there have been some other local organizations. And I guess I have to, at least on that standpoint, feel that in general, and there certainly are, there are always places you can find stuff and say, well, why are we doing this? Why are we paying for that? Or as Mark said, maybe we can do this a lot cheaper than farming it out. Though interesting enough, recently it seems like everything they farmed out has come back cheaper than they expected. which is probably good, except, or maybe they're overestimating, or who knows. Part of the problem is it's a public process, so everyone kind of knows what you're going to pay. So if you're a smart contractor, yeah, that's what you bid. But in general, I think that that we've not been doing a horrific job in managing the city's finances for the last several years.
And Dick had another comment.
Yeah, one last comment. I talked about people coming and talking to us. If you look at the budget, the people that really know how this money's being spent and how efficient we are is the employees. And we've got good employees. And I would encourage them, if they can see a better way to do it and get that job done, management will hate me for this, but if you can't get it through them, you come see us. Because we need to make sure we're operating as efficient as we can. Like Mark said, some employees, we can do things in-house much easier and cheaper. And there's still other ways we can do it much easier and cheaper, but the employee's the one that knows what's going on. So come tell us if you've got an idea, if you can't get it somewhere else.
Okay. And I do want to remind everyone, this is a call-in show. If you have questions for the candidates, call 225-9655. I only have a couple questions left, and when I run out of questions, we're ending. So now's the time to call if you have a burning question for your city council members. My next question is so this comes up every year, sometimes on the city side, sometimes on the borough side, and it's a big brouhaha, or there's a lot of questions about funding grants for nonprofit agencies, even though it tends to be actually quite a small part of the overall budget, which I find rather fascinating. And so what do you think is the role of nonprofit organizations in Ketchikan and the role of the city in helping to fund those? And this time we'll start with, I'm looking at my list, Dave Kiefer.
As a person who's worked for a variety of nonprofits over the years, it's their role to provide services that are necessary, but the city either can't provide or is unwilling to provide. Many of these services, whether it's helping the homeless, whether it's providing design assistance for builders, any of these things, in most communities, certainly most larger communities, are provided by the cities, boroughs, counties, whatever. We don't do that here in a lot of cases. So we rely on the nonprofits to do those things. There's a cost to that. And as you mentioned, we often spend a lot of time arguing about these issues when in reality we're talking about, you know, a tiny amount of the overall city budget. And yet you would think people who are opposed to funding nonprofits will say, oh, my God, that's my money. That's my tax dollars. Well, that's your 75 cents last year. I mean, let's be real. The reality is nonprofits, because they don't have the payroll issues and the benefits issues that the city has, can provide those things a lot cheaper. And they're very efficient. And frankly, as someone who's been on those groups, it's not like there's a lot of extra stuff floating around there. You know, they do the job, and they do a job that needs to be done.
Thank you. And Dick Coos?
Yeah, I believe the budget for the nonprofits is about $400,000, and which isn't much in the budget. But I think the key to it is we've got a process set up with a committee set up that does a very good job of evaluating it. And so we trust them to do it. And my only comment would be is they look forward to it. Some of the nonprofits, even though they're all doing good jobs, may be better able to fund themselves a little more. Some of the others cannot. And so that's where I think we need to help as much as we can, staying within the budget we've got or depending upon the circumstances, which we did for the homeless shelter this year. And that'll be one that's filtered in. So it does get a lot of talk, but it's a necessary type thing we need to do.
Okay. Thank you. And Mark Flora.
I was actually looking at this year's list of grant recipients before your show tonight.
Oh, you brought it with you and everything.
I brought it with me. Just in case. There isn't one group on that list that doesn't offer something valuable to our community. And in the overall scheme of things, when you look at the budget, yes, it's a very small fraction of our overall budget. But that being said, since we're spending other people's money, I think we still need to be very careful. And I think sometimes the nonprofits generate so much passion because these are sidewalks just aren't sexy to talk about. Okay. There's a lot of things that are part of city government that are mundane. But when it comes to the nonprofits, there's a lot of passion because many, many people in this town are involved with one or more of them. So when you look at the list, there are no bad causes. But in an era of shrinking budgets, I think we just need to be very careful how we prioritize where the money goes. And I wouldn't want their job, because it's really difficult, and we see the quarterly reports, but I think that all of the nonprofits, and I know that they're doing this already, but they just need to continue to look at other sources of revenue, fundraising. If their particular nonprofit sells tickets, if there's things like that that they can do just to help fund themselves a little bit, I just think that's to their benefit.
Dave had another comment.
Just real quickly, one thing that's different on the city side of things and on other local funding groups is that it is a portion of sales tax revenue that goes at a certain percentage. So if the revenues go down, there's less money to spend. If the revenues go up, there's a little more money to spend. And so that's, to me, that's a good situation, because that shows if the community is prospering or getting better in terms of revenues, then there is more money. If we have to retrench, then there's not automatic retrenching. Retrenching. That's not a word.
Retrenching.
Retrenching, yeah.
I think that would be the word.
Retrenching.
What? my last question. So now's the time to call, 225-9655, because this is my last question before closing comments. So what will be your top priorities in the next few years? And this time we'll start with Mark Flora.
I have three. One is the ports and uplands expansion, and we discussed the importance of that and how we balance the needs of the tourism industry and how it benefits our town economically with the needs of other local businesses and residents, so that they have the ability to enjoy their own downtown and enjoy their own home. Another one is infrastructure, just in total, in general. Take a walk around Ketchikan, and it's not hard to find a sidewalk, a curb, a street, something that needs repair. We have water filtration is an upcoming big ticket item, and it's really important for our town. Dave hit the nail on the head. How ironic that we live in a place with 12 feet of rain a year and we still have water issues. How can that be? But that's the reality. We have to find a way to fund these capital projects and fund the ongoing maintenance of this infrastructure and make our home a nice, pleasant, solid place to be. My third priority is the hospital. I learned a lot in the first 11 months after being appointed, in that when you sit on the city council, and I'm sure any other government body, all of a sudden people find you more approachable. So you bump into somebody at the post office, you bump into somebody at the grocery store, here and there. And I've personally gotten multiple comments about the hospital. There are some billing issues that have been ongoing for quite some time that need to be addressed. This is in no way, I'm not pillaring the hospital. These are comments that people have advanced to me. We're $52 million into a project. I'd like to see phase two get done in the next couple of years. And the other one for me with the hospital is, we're $52 million into a project, and the residents of this city have no effective voice on the hospital board. They came to us recently with an offer that we handily rejected. And then I realized maybe after the meeting or at the end of the meeting, they probably got what they were wanting, which was us to say no. But we have no capacity to vote. We have no capacity to sit in on an executive session. We can be dismissed at any time. This was their offer to us. And I think there's a better offer out there. And I think we need to work with Peace Health and find a way to have city representation on the hospital board.
And Dave Kiefer.
Well, certainly the ports and harbors is the big issue out there. But also, as Mark said, the infrastructure. You know, we see that the streets here have a problem. It was funny because I was doing a thing a week or so ago up at the high school. And I was asking all those groups of kids what their issue was. And all those young drivers were saying, Tongass Avenue is horrible. Well, it'll get better in spots, but we know Tongass is this huge long thing, and they start on one end, and by the time they get to the other end, they have to go back and fix the first end. So that will always be an issue. But think of the things we don't see, the water system, the sewers, those things. Those are going to need work. I guess my big priority is what it's always been. You know, what can I do to leave a better community behind? Although it feels like I've been here forever, someday I won't be here. And I guess the point is what will you leave behind? And do you leave behind a better community than you started? And I guess that's probably why we all do what we do. Because if it wasn't for that, what's the point?
And Dick Coos.
It's real hard not to repeat everything that's been said here, but... Because the ports down there are a big issue to keep the community healthy financially wise. We have to get that right when we get it done, and we're going to start seeing action on that actually this winter, because Dock 3's float is going to be pulled and reworked. And then we'll see what happens with Dock 4 and the Cruise Line Agency folks, but that's important. The other one I think is important to keep the community healthy and in the long run is always keep your eye on the budget and hold people accountable for getting it done and getting it done on time. The water, the infrastructure from that standpoint is always an issue. The highways through town really aren't ours, but we've got to keep with the state and make sure what's in the future. So we're going to see impacts for the next 2 years, probably from about the Plaza Mall clear to Tatsugas and maybe south. And we're all going to be impacted, but we need those roads fixed because I don't even know whether some of them will hold up this winter, as big as those holes are getting. So my long-term goal is just I live here for 37 years. So I plan to live here until when. And we want to keep it a good, healthy, wealthy place to live for the people.
Thank you. And all... Your priorities sounded a lot like closing comments, but I'm now giving you a time for closing comments. So if you have anything to add to that, and we're starting with Dick Coos.
Please go vote on Tuesday. Thank you.
All right. And Mark Flora.
The short time that I've been on the council has been very eye-opening, very educational. I'm looking forward to the next 3 years, and Dave couldn't have said it better. Hopefully, when my term is done, that I'm part of leaving Ketchikan a little bit better off than when we started.
And Dave Kiefer.
The statement I've heard by several people in the last couple of weeks, looking ahead and seeing no competition in the city, is, well, maybe I'm not going to vote. And that, you need to vote, people. There's choices on the school board. There's choices on the borough assembly. There are choices that will directly affect your lives in this community. And plus, you really just should vote. Because as we've all run into people in public office who will come up to us and start chewing on us about something and say, blah, 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 why? And if you ask them if they voted, a lot of the time they didn't. Because what we're looking at, 70% of the people don't vote unless it's a really, really heated election. And don't be one of those 70% of the people, because, the reality is if you start screaming, complaining, I'll probably just tune you out because, did you vote? Okay. Show up.
And there is that ballot question.
Yeah,
so.
Oh, yeah, that's true. True, exactly. Yeah. Good point.
And Dick?
I was just going to say, and you almost said the words, for about the last, 25 years since I've been retired, I worked with a group that went to D.C. to advocate for resources. The world is run by those who show up. If you don't show up and vote, we're still going to listen to you, but it's going to be real tough because you need to be there helping us out, and by voting, that helps us out and you out.
And voting is this coming Tuesday. And we're going to close with some really great news. An announcement from the Ketchikan Gateway Borough: repairs to the ferry ramp are complete. The airport ferry has resumed normal operations with vehicle and passenger traffic. So thanks to everyone for your patience. And that wraps up KRBD City Council call-in forum. I've been your host, Layla Carey. Thanks to Calvin for calling in and to the candidates, Dick Coos, Mark Flora, and Dave Kiefer. And again, remember to vote on October 3rd. Good night.